The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond indeed.
Mm-hmm.
We're here doing Beyond. Yeah. Welcome everybody to Beyond episode 505. I'm Max Scoville and I'm joined by Alana Pierce.
Hi.
And Marty Sliva.
This is a palindrome.
What?
A palindrome.
I hate it when you, every 10 episodes, you're like.
505 and two zigzags, baby, that's all we need.
Holt 505, yes.
Everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
I don't even know what area code that is.
It's a Colt 505 error.
Well, yeah. Anyway, this is sort of a PlayStation podcast most of the time. We got some cool stuff to talk about. There's a game called Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, which came out today, which you may not have realized because they're kind of hiding it. In the way that the best games are always hidden away, but it's pretty cool. I've been kind of catching up. I played Little Nightmares. I played Edith Finch. Those are cool games. We got a release date for Horizon the Frozen Wilds. But first things first, let's talk a little bit about Hellblade.
Yeah. So we talked about this last week in terms of like, hey, remember that game from Ninja Theory? It's coming out next week. And none of us had like seen the game in years or played the game. We just knew we all like Enslaved and DMC and Heavenly Sword was interesting. And so it's like, hey, it's the studio's first game in 5 years. And I got to play it over the weekend. And this is, it's sounds cliche because it's one of those things where like, I don't want to really talk about it.
Yeah.
Because the more you talk about it, the more you reveal.
Well, I really want to play it this weekend and I don't want you to talk about it because I don't want to know anything
about
it. But
I feel like we're on
a show. We have an audience.
So I said it right here. This is a sleeper contender for game of the year, in my opinion. If you go in thinking that this is like their other games, like a combat heavy third person action game, you're going to be disappointed. If you go in wanting a smart, thoughtful, borderline walking simulator, that deals with mental illness in a better way than almost any game I've ever played, then you're in for a treat because this game is that.
It looks so combat heavy. Like, it just looks like something that would be combat heavy.
So here's the thing is that this is them doing it on their own. This, I think initially maybe Sony was like pairing up with them to help publish this or something, but that's not the case.
And self-published,
this is, this is Ninja Theory publishing this on their own, and they've been calling it an indie AAA, I guess, which is, I think, very much true.
This game is stunning.
It's gorgeous.
And if you play this game on a PS4 Pro, it runs at 60. It's in 4K. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Like,
this
4K?
Yeah.
It's, I thought you said Funke, and I was thinking of like Tobias.
4K. It's not actually 4K because the PS4 Pro can't.
Oh, gotcha. So okay. 4K. I thought you just said a thing really strangely.
Sling Blade?
Worth noting.
It was an Arrested Development. Yeah.
It is a gorgeous game, and it does have a photo mode. So I know people get really into that. I started screwing with it. It's an interesting game. I feel like they wanted to add more combat, but they kind of looked at their watches and they were like, we've been working on this for 5 years. We should probably ship it.
Yeah.
It's like $30, right?
It's $30. It's about 6 to 7 hours, depending on, if you're going to sort of look in the nooks and crevices for, different relics, which give you backstory. Going just on a very surface level, this isn't spoilers. This has been all the marketing material. You play as a Celtic warrior named Senua, who travels into the land of Norse mythology,
she got real big eyes.
She has very big eyes, but, I think Senua is, I think when you look back is going to be one of the strongest characters in video games in the last couple of years. I think her writing, the actual mocap performance, and the VO of not only her, but of the supporting cast in the game are top to bottom awesome.
Yeah.
I still don't know why this kind of thing affects me this much, but having this and like not playing this game yet, but then also having Uncharted The Lost Legacy have two incredibly strong female characters is so cool.
Like, it's incredible.
Like, I think about like me when I was younger and I loved Jade so much and I loved Joanna Dark from Perfect Dark, and like having both of these things in 1 month is like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best.
Hellblade. Yeah. but when I said it deals with mental illness, the first credit was, so the game opens up with a splash screen, and like the way an Assassin's Creed game opens up that says this was developed by a group of people of various faiths and beliefs and everything. This opens up with, hey, we consulted various mental health experts and professionals, which they 100% did. There's a documentary in the game that you can watch that goes into the development process, which they went to the doctorate program at Cambridge and consulted with them. And the very first credit in the game, in the opening cutscene, before game director and before writer, is mental health advisor.
That's amazing.
Now, this is where it gets interesting to me. I haven't beaten it yet. I played probably about half of it, you were saying.
Yeah.
Did I see you playing it before? Did I walk
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really pretty.
It is a gorgeous game. I think it's just sort of kind of bearing the lead. Like, the first two credits are mental health advisor and then historical accuracy person or whatever. And I'm like, that's an interesting combination. And then they're digging into mythology. And I feel like they've been very transparent since day one, being like, this deals with serious mental illness, like the mental health themes. Like, this is about, you know, being sick in the head. And we're not going to do like tokenism or stereotyping or whatever. But at the same time, the fact that it is kind of wrapped up in this mythological context, I think almost kind of sort of dilutes the relevance. And it's like, to be like, oh, this is super accurate to what was believed mythologically.
Sure.
It's also super accurate to what mental health professionals say it is. But it's like, how do you parse that? How do you separate the one from the other?
Very different.
But I feel like the mythology through and through, once you finish it, is really smart and allegorical. And like, if this game is ultimately about, again, it's such a weird thing to not want to talk about, it is ultimately about one thing. No matter if that thing is mental health or if that thing are mythological beasts in Ragnarok. Like, I think there is one focal theme of this game, and everything you do, including the way you solve puzzles and including the way levels and stages play out, including the sound design, all feed back into that singular message in a way that, I mean, most games are, especially AAA games, everything's sort of disparate.
Well, to think of like Life is Strange, I talk crap about that game all the time, but there were really, really strong emotional themes. There was a girl who was suicidal, who had effectively been like drugged and assaulted, and then they sidetrack from the emotional value of that happening or from the impact of that happening by being like, let's go shoot some bottles in an abandoned junkyard. And it's like, these are two very different stories and I want you to commit to one or the other.
Right. Like, or really there's like, oh, you can control time. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
It's one of the things that sometimes throws me the wrong way about anime or about Japanese stuff is these kind of like drastic tonal inconsistencies, like something like, I don't know, like Evangelion or Dragon Ball even, where it's like there's the silly side and there's like the apocalyptic side, and it's just sort of, it's hard to take the serious part seriously when there's that. But I mean, that's how life is. Like, there's the highs and the lows.
That's absolutely true.
It's just weird when you kind of compartmentalize it into one piece of media.
Maybe with Hellblade, because everyone is starting from such a different standpoint when it comes to mental health. Like, knowing the two of you very well, you have very different experiences with mental health, and it's like everyone does. So maybe people will absorb this game completely differently based on
It just seems,
which I like.
It seems sort of odd to put that foot forward first, as opposed to like, here's the game, let it speak for itself. If you're curious, here's what we did to make it. I do love the fact that on the front, on the loading screen, it's just like, or, you know, title screen, it's just like, here's a featurette explaining what we're doing. When I was complaining about developer diaries and the lack of behind the scenes supplementary content, that's what I want more of. I want more like, hey, if you enjoyed this game.
It's a very self-published thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, hey, learn what we did.
And they give really interesting insights, because if you played Heavenly Sword, you know that Ninja Theory does some of the best facial mocap that there is. Like, Andy Serkis played like a bunch of bad guys in Heavenly Sword and just knocked it out of the park.
Main dude in Enslaved.
And Main Dude in Enslaved, exactly. The Monkey Man.
What's his name?
Chimpy.
I think it might even actually
be Monkey. I think it is Monkey. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's Journey to the West.
Yeah. The main character, the Senua, like, her eyes are just like huge and so sort of like otherworldly and expressive, and the performance is amazing, but I was like, there's no way the actual person, like, they had to have like touched this up. And then in the behind the scenes thing, you realize that they did, like, in pre-production, they were like, a video editor who works for, the team, they were like, hey, can you just do this until we find an actress? And they liked her performance so much that this video editor for Ninja Theory just, that's her. That's Senua. That's her voice. That's her. That's really like cool. Her facial animations and like.
One, side note, the same thing happened with Borderlands, the pre-sequel. It wasn't intended to be like a bunch of Australian actors, but the dev team was over there and they put in placeholder voices in Australian. And then so they were like, this is great. Let's keep them Australian.
This is how we differentiate it.
I love that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, some of the best writing, some of the best performances, and I'll kick some specific things I want to talk about down the road until maybe we'll do like a little bit of a spoiler cast.
Just to say game-wise, I think, it's very sound, like the kind of walking simulator parts of it work. It is a good game. I can't figure out if I like it or not.
Yeah. Interesting.
Is there
combat?
Yeah, yes. There's combat. I was going to touch on that. It doesn't feel unfinished. It feels like it wasn't everything they wanted it to be.
Right.
There's basically no HUD in the game. Like everything is
pretty much the HUD is audio based.
Yeah.
So play this with headphones. Play it.
Yeah. Play this with
quiet
headphones.
Environment.
Yeah. The sound design is spectacular, mm-hmm. and I usually don't notice that kind of stuff. But there's like parts where it's just like very powerful.
Yeah.
But the combat is. You go into the menu, and first of all, there's difficulty settings. There's camera mode there, which I didn't know about unless I went in there. And then, of course, it tells you all the button cues, which it never actually tells you in the game.
Yeah. There is no tutorial. You're just in combat, and you're like, I don't know. So you have a heavy attack, you have a light attack,
a parry,
a kick block, and then you have a dodge.
Yeah. It's
and
good.
Yeah.
Like it's good
is
combat.
It like hack and slash?
But,
or is it like Batman Arkham?
It's more like Arkham to where the combat, you will enter a combat instance and you'll fight 1, 2, 3 enemies at a time. Mm-hmm. And then once you've beat a finite amount, you move on. Okay. But it's definitely not hack and slash.
Okay. Interesting.
But there's an interesting in the way that because the camera is so, I think part of, sort of the, paranoia or suspicion it drives into the players, the fact that the camera is so close behind Senua the entire game that when you're in combat, a lot of times you'll lose an enemy behind you. Mm-hmm. And instead of a prompt coming up, the voices in your head will whisper to you, someone's behind you, Senua. And so you'll know to roll backwards and be like, oh, a second enemy came in.
Right.
Wow. That's pretty
funny. Yeah.
The camera's really interesting because I just played Edith Finch, which is kind of a typical walking simulator where instead of shooting a gun, you just look closely at something. I love that's what the triggers do. In this case, they still have that. It's like your focus ability sort of, and you can use it to like look at a rock or, side note, this has probably some of the most realistic beaches I've seen in a video game.
God,
period. Yeah. They're gorgeous.
Okay. So what I had seen in this game is, like a cover art and some screenshots. I walked past Brandon playing it once, and then I've walked past you playing it once. I'm like, this game has beaches?
Yeah.
Like, this game has combat? It looks like such a, I don't know. Like, it just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks so Japanese to me, like, the first time I saw it. And then, having seen it after that, I'm like, oh no, it doesn't really. Like, it looks Middle Earthy. Like,
it's very strange.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued.
But yeah, the zooming in thing, like, I think we're used to walking simulators or what was it? Platformer?
Yeah, someone coined the term platformer,
I really liked. Yeah, it's a narrative driven experience. If you don't want to call that a game, that's fine. Yeah. Just sit down in the corner. but yeah, like usually that's first person because it kind of puts you in the role and you there's an emphasis on like looking at stuff that kind of carries over with the camera angle in this because it's locked to you and it's this really weird thing where you're still controlling like a third person game, like a normal one. Mm-hmm. And if you flip the camera all the way around, Senua will like look over her shoulder. Like it's always, you're not controlling the camera, you're controlling her gaze, but how her body is positioned is like,
yeah.
And that, I think it shifts slightly in combat. So you're automatically locked onto the nearest enemy, but like there's times when it feels like, almost wooden, like it feels like a little bit too rigid for what you're doing. Also, just to save everybody some time, L1 is to sprint because very slowly.
And the game never tells
that
you
is
that.
Helpful.
Yeah.
So it seems like you are sold on the premise, but as an actual gameplay, is it good?
I like the puzzles.
Yeah.
And they introduced some mechanics. I think the game could have been fine without combat, and I wish they would have gone a little bit deeper into the puzzles.
Uncharted doesn't need combat.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
No, so to sum it up, it feels like a Witcher side quest, crossed with The Witness.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Kind of a, for better or for worse way, because it's very, like, the main puzzle thing is basically finding these patterns in the environment and lining them up.
Very
and
messy.
It's more engaging than it sounds, but the fact that you do kind of walk a little bit slowly and you're kind of stuck in this environment and, you know, it's like slowly walk, climbing up ladders gets a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
The combat is like, is solid, but again, it's sort of like, it is only there when it wants to be there. So it's like, the boss fights are pretty cool. Like, there are boss fights in there and they're kind of badass.
Yeah.
But it's also like, is this a puzzle game or is this going to suck? Like, there are parts where it literally sucker punches you. Like, you'll walk in a door and something just attacks you and you're like, what the? Come on, man.
Yeah.
I had one part where, because there weren't any like actual cues about what's going on, I got killed by random stuff and I was just like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I didn't
there's
even
also,
see what, like, a log fell on me or
there's
something.
There's a thing. I don't think this is a spoiler.
You okay. always say that.
Yes,
you always
every time
say,
you say that,
that
it's a spoiler.
Just don't say the thing.
I don't think this is a spoiler. It spoils entire movie.
Okay,
don't
how about
do
the part
it.
Where you get the motorcycle?
No. Okay, so I have a question.
Yes?
There's a thing that points to the fact that there may be a legitimate fail-safe or a fail state in this game that deletes your save. And I want to know if that's real or not.
Oh, yeah. That's...
And I was, throughout the game, terrified that I'd get near the end and that the game would delete my save. And I still have
that's
no actually, idea if that's a real thing.
I don't think it's a spoiler.
That's
a mechanic that's introduced very early on. But basically,
I feel like I don't want to know anymore.
Okay. All right.
Well, if we do have an audience though.
Anyway.
But everyone, if any of this sounded interesting to you and if you want to know the answer to any of these questions, I recommend the game. $30
well,
is probably cheaper with
PS
Plus.
I'm planning to hope to finish it this weekend and then if you finish it sometime soon, then we can.
I want to do a spoiler.
We need to do those more.
It's an interesting game. It is, I go out, check it out, play it because, yeah, it should be rewarded because a bunch of people made a game.
Also, it's August. There's nothing else
it's
out.
6 or 7 hours, and you have a couple weeks until Uncharted and then Destiny come out. So.
Yeah. So it does say that it deals with like mental illness in games, and I feel like we should talk about this because there's a huge group of the gaming population who uses it as a form of escapism.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how it pops up here and there in games as a you know, it's something that's dealt with in the subject matter. In some cases better than others, but
yeah, like I think Life is Strange deals with it really badly.
Yeah. I mean, Life is Strange. Sorry.
That was the name of the game. He said it.
I played What Remains of Edith Finch this weekend. Yeah. And I love that because that is like, very much like just kind of turns you loose and, you can get through it in one sitting. I think I got up to pee once or something, but like, it's, like really, really good. I almost dreaded getting into it. Like I kept putting it off, and that's part of the reason it took me this long to get to it. Because it also came out alongside a bunch of like, for lack of a better word, fun games. You know, that don't make you cry.
Well, yeah, Edith Finch makes you feel a bunch of uncomfortable feelings. Like I played probably 3 hours, maybe two. I didn't play that
almost
much
finished
of
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I feel like I'm only about halfway based on the walkthrough. But it makes you feel really uncomfortable, but also like weirdly peaceful. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like there's things that happen that are devastating, but I also feel very calm about it. Like it's because of how introspective it is.
I mean, it's not a spoiler to say this. It's about visiting a house that the Finch family lived in for several generations, and it looks like this dollhouse that you continually built upon. It seems like a house that, like, with a brisk wind, will fall over into the ocean, which that's actually a plot point into the game. But every person in the house, it's like the family was cursed, and everyone died a strange death, and so you are experiencing all of these deaths, but ultimately, so many of them feel peaceful in the end through gameplay, even though when you sit and think about it, you're like,
it's
a kid died. That's terrible.
Yeah, and the way that the kid died is just the worst.
I think it's also really interesting if you take all the death with a grain of salt, if the death is more symbolic and it's more just about a dysfunctional family.
Well, yeah, part of like some of the, it's really well written and some of the deaths are alluded to or related to freedom. I think is a theme that it's like, and he was free. And it's like, I don't know what that means. Does that mean that he left the family or that he actually died?
Sure.
Like you can take whatever you want from that. But I think it's well written enough that it's not horribly depressing and gruesome and disgusting.
Well, and it's a game that every member of that family has their baggage, and you uncover some of the baggage by going through what their room was like what they enjoyed in life, like what their focus was, what their obsession was.
Environments are really well designed.
I think that one does it.
They look lived in.
Yeah.
Probably some of the best. I mean, like environmental storytelling is a term that gets thrown around a lot, but like whenever it's actually smart, you know, when it's something where you're
sure
it doesn't completely spell it out for you.
I mean, literally early environmental storytelling was blood on a wall that wrote out,
Good
go
job,
away.
Bioshock.
Yeah. And it's like, that's not a slight against BioShock because for the time.
Oh, I loved it.
That was really good.
I was like, look at this blood on the wall. Gods will be what? Like,
it's like, it's... Yeah, exactly. But, it's interesting to see that sort of develop and grow and become more nuanced in a thing like you.
I mean, like going through somebody's mail, going through their trash, like that kind of like, I love that sort of just
voyeurism,
like forensic storytelling.
Yeah.
Just like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I still haven't finished Night in the Woods. That's,
I never played it.
One of my favorite games of the year. That game gets just really
it's
real.
It's 2D, right?
Yeah. It's all a bunch of cute little animals.
Right.
But it's also like the most sort of like, hey, depressing small town coming of age stuff. Like,
right. I think Miranda and Callie really.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
It's fabulous. Yeah. Complete jerk of the wheel. Spec Ops does PTSD really well.
Spec Ops is an excellent game.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I know that's it's a little bit different than the sort of the mental illness and problems we were talking about before.
Yeah,
but it's also
kind of on a higher level there.
Spec Ops is something that if you haven't played it, you should absolutely try. Yeah. So it's not that easy to play now.
Yeah,
easy, but
like I'm assuming that game has difficulty levels like anything else. Try to just crank it down to as easy as possible.
No, I mean literally getting it is hard. Like, I don't think that you can play it on PS4 or Xbox One.
Oh, is it not? Maybe it's on PS Now.
Is it backwards compatible?
No, well, it's not backwards compatible.
In a couple weeks, we're going to have its writer, Walt Williams, on the show, and we can ask him.
We can hassle him.
I don't think he has any control over that.
We can ask him if it's playable. He'll probably know that.
It's a great game, and Walt's, I think he has a lot of experience in writing about military situations, and that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's one of the realest, because I feel like a lot of video game writers are people who don't have that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Are like, I'm trying to guess at what this is like, and it's probably awful, but also hoorah, whereas Spec Ops is just doubles down on it being horrific.
Which is really interesting, because Spec Ops kind of flipped it on its ass, because that was a series. I remember like going to preview this, where it was like, oh, you want to go see the new Spec Ops? And I was like, Spec Ops?
Yeah.
And you go back to the Wikipedia, and it's like, there was a period where they were putting out like two Spec Ops games a year, and they were just like cheapo, like just,
I mean, they
were shovelware.
They were literally,
to be clear, we're referring to Spec Ops, the line.
Right.
But
not Spec Ops, the two a year that were like in Walmart bargain bin.
Spec Ops, like Paratrooper Adventure or whatever the hell it was.
Spec Ops, Let's Go Get Red.
Yeah. So I was just like, what? Why would I go check that out? And then they didn't really tell you, they didn't beat you over the head with the fact that it's like, this is a very good story game. They were kind of like, it's a sort of retelling of Heart of Darkness. And I'm like, so like Apocalypse Now. And they're like, you gotta, a little bit. And
I was like, desert.
And they're like, there's sand. It's a mechanic. And I'm like, really? That's what you got? All right.
I remember when I previewed Wolfenstein, The New Order, and it was the start of the game where you're just like shooting stuff down in the plane at the start. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It's all awful. And then, you know, you play 2 hours extra and you're like, oh, this game's incredible.
Yeah.
Why didn't you stop at this part?
Maybe previewing a vertical slice of a large multi-hour experience isn't the best way to convey what it's all about.
Yeah.
Getting to preview Uncharted The Lost Legacy was actually awesome. Like, I feel like that was a really good way to find out.
Very excited to play
that was a really good preview. Yeah. They would just like play 45 minutes, do whatever you want in that 45 minutes. You just got 45
Which Chloe do you think is better? So the last two games you previewed were Uncharted and Life is Strange. Which Chloe do you think is better?
Definitely Uncharted. Chloe Price can die in a fire. Thank you.
Wow, spoilers.
Oh, episode 4.
I hope she dies in a fire.
Is that the
prequel?
She's clearly not going
to. Oh, that's a good point.
Maybe they'll come back to it and they'll have like a big fire, like a splitting timeline. And there's just a large gymnasium.
Like a
fire.
Reaping?
Well, that kind of happens in...
Is there fire?
Well, there may as well be.
Metaphorical
it's like
fire.
It's a big old storm.
There's a big storm, yeah. Anyway, you were talking about Nier Automata.
Yeah, you've been playing
heavy themes in that.
Oh, absolutely. There's weird heavy themes in that. And the best thing about it is it's the weird heavy themes of, I think, robots getting sentience.
Is that what it?
I think. Like, I love how
you've played that game, what, like 1.5 times?
Two and a half times.
And you're still not sure?
Well, more. I've played 32 hours of this game. I have 7 endings. I'm on playthrough C.
There's 26. One for each letter.
Is this like the dark side of the moon, the game? Like, is this like, is there just like open to interpretation and everyone kind of sees it differently?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty straightforward, but it is a fascinating game in terms of storytelling in that you play through A and then you play through B and you're like, okay, I have a vague understanding of this, but a lot of stuff that happens in B you play as a different character, so it adds like really messed up context to A that you then retrospectively feel terrible about. And like, oh, I was really mean to that thing that I didn't understand, like what was going through its head. Like the marionette part is like this robot who just like talks about wanting to be beautiful, and you learn more context about that, and it's like, it's super messed up. And this like full dialogue thing, it's just like, it's super intense. But then playthrough C, which I am now halfway through, is really just a sequel to A and B. It's another game inside of this game.
It's very strange.
You get halfway through C and it's like, hey, remember that game that you played? Here's a new one. Like, I mean, it's crazy.
So I finished the A. And so the reason we're talking about this now also is because it came out sort of at the worst time of the year, just in terms of like,
we just kind of slept on it.
It was like right after Resident Evil and then right before like Breath of the Wild and
Horizon
and then Persona hit. And so,
and then we have event season and it's,
yeah.
I feel like now's a great time to play.
Yeah. And so I got through A. So I finished the A ending. And then when you get through the credits, it's like, the game may be done, but we here at the Square Enix PR team suggest that you keep playing.
Comes
because
up as
there's
like a
more.
Message from Square Enix for you.
As opposed to the game should be like, hey, you haven't seen, this isn't the end of the game. Keep playing.
It's barely even the game. Like A is like the most base level of what that game is. And you're doing yourself a disservice to only play A because B makes A better and then C makes both of them better. Like it's so, I don't know, it's really, really fascinating storytelling, but one of my favorite parts of A is at the very end where some of the characters like sort of just start this religious cult.
What?
Oh yeah.
They just like is
inside the abandoned
fascinating
factory.
Fascinating and brutal, and you're just like, how has this happened? And then you learn context about that in B that's just like,
oh, I hope you learn context, because when you get to an A, I'm like, what happened here? You all found God?
Well, I think the weirdest thing about A is like the two main bad guys just don't make any sense.
Adam and Eve, yeah.
They're just like, they're super weird. But it's basically just, I don't know, a game that makes you do a bunch of stuff and then makes you feel bad about all of the stuff that you've done and then also tells you that everything you're doing is completely meaningless, but you just keep doing it. And it's like,
it's also like Spec Ops.
What?
it's rough, man.
I've seen like three screenshots from this game, and I know the main producer wears like a moon hat.
He wears a moon hat.
You do see moon hat also.
All right. Yeah. And also the DLC was you could beat up the CEO of Square Enix.
Yep. You could fight him in an arena.
More I hear about this game, the more I'm just confused by it. I don't know what it is. I feel like it's just an elaborate prank.
It's totally
prank.
One of those things where it looks,
it kind of does feel like an elaborate prank when you're playing it as well.
And it's also like very, it is,
I think
it looks
like a PS3 game.
And it doesn't look necessarily great, but it's very much like the lead character looks ripped out of an anime. A lot of the themes in my mind, like emotional beats of the first.
The only part of her that gets cut up is her skirt, so you can see her white underwear.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the only part of her that really
gets when you go to the robot's hand, and I was like, why are we doing this? I'm excited to play more just because I love the idea of experiencing something one way, assuming I know what's going on, and then seeing it from a different point of view and being like, oh, I'm a monster.
A lot of people who have played it have been like telling other people to play it all year. And that's like, I basically started playing it because Mitch had told me to play it enough. And now I'm doing the same thing. And it's like, because this is a way that I don't think I've ever experienced storytelling. Like it's so intricate. And it's like the gameplay itself, like there's option for customization. Like it gets pretty in depth.
You can make your
like
robot friend look like a PlayStation 1, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make your little.
You do lots of that kind of stuff.
I know the most.
There are cool abilities, but
full of things about this game. It's really.
There's also, it gets to a point where because I have crappy wrists from having tendonitis, it is a little bit hard for me to play this game because there's a lot of just tapping the same button.
Did you the side quest where like the circus men want to have a parade and they want you to be their escort all the way back to the resistance movement?
Yeah.
And so they keep getting attacked because they're little parade men who are pacifists.
Oh, that's odd.
That hurt my hands so much.
You need to level up.
By the end of it, I was just like, I was trying to protect you parade men. And
I know, they're
really,
they're all
tunnel.
Like, love is real. parade for love. And they're just trying to kill them. And it's like, I love the characters in it. It's really great. But you can also, if you want to play through it and just experience the story, I discovered that you can play through it on easy, and there's this thing called auto chips, which basically means the chips that are in your Android, you can put on auto mode, so you will like auto dodge and auto attack. So you effectively don't have to participate in combat except to heal yourself, which like I wouldn't entirely recommend, but maybe
like heal simulators.
I don't know.
My hand gets sore and like it's auto chips. Just,
I mean, I think a lot of Japanese games, they have more content. Like they're just deeper.
Sure. Yeah.
And at the same time, I think there's also like a higher tolerance for difficulty and for time synchery.
Yeah.
Man, and it's gets real.
Like the whole S rank thing in Japanese action games. Yeah. Like,
And it's like sometimes, I mean, it's what sucks about games is that you want to like experience, you want to like consume this thing, but it pushes back against you. So
yeah, we were talking about that on Unlocked about how
because I love being challenged by games. I think it makes me like them more. Like I think that dying and having to do a boss fight over and over again makes me appreciate a game more. It was like a part in Nier where I had to do that.
Makes me
like,
say the like C word at the television.
Yeah, but I think people consume them differently, obviously. But I really like being like, all right, I have to step my game up to actually accomplish this thing.
My thing
is,
I always feel
that.
Like I'm doing a bad thing. If I keep having to replay a section, I'm like, I could be onto another game by now.
Okay, well, the part that I'm playing through right now is the single worst part in the entire game, like, no question. You can't do anything, including jump a lot of the time. And if you get hit, you can get hit into like this pit in the city that you cannot get out of, meaning that you have to restart. But because there aren't any auto saves, you have to restart from like way back.
That doesn't make you
infuriating.
That doesn't make you feel good about the game.
No, like, that makes me think the game is boss bad. Fight.
Yeah.
Boss fights,
that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just the pain in the ass of balancing. So yeah, to segue here. First of all, I want to just like kind of squash this stigma about like we shouldn't talk about older games. Like we were just talking about this earlier where like there's this kind of expectation for us and you know, obviously we should stay up to date with things, but to just consume the newest thing and then get on with it, you know, and it's like, obviously like being part of the conversation when a game launches is huge,
sure.
But also like it, I don't know, like you were saying you're playing Enslaved and Marty was like, why?
Yeah, I finished that last year.
Yeah. And then I was telling Max how like my immediate reaction was like, why are you playing that? And then I was like, no, it should be, oh, that game rules. I'm glad you're getting around to playing that.
Yeah.
Because like just the way time works, 2017's historically been an incredible year for games, and there's no way, given our jobs and lives, that we could have consumed everything this year so far. So the idea of going back to play Nier or going back to play Persona later or Neo or something from 5 years ago.
I mean, the idea of only playing the newest games constantly
is boring.
Like, well, makes me feel anxious. I'm like, there's so many things that I want to play.
Well, I think it goes I can see why going back to older games is frustrating. Even just going back to last generation, not having the ability to just put the console in rest mode and immediately pick it up again.
Oh, sure. There's things like that. Yeah.
Also, I've been trying to finish Bully for 2 years.
Exactly.
But some of the mechanics are just like, oh,
sometimes
boy.
The mechanics just suck. I jumped into, No More Heroes because I never played that. I got the PS3 version and I don't know. It's got load times. There's part like manual saving is clunky. There's stuff in there that just isn't fun to play because that game came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember playing through Grim Fandango when it re-released on PS4. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, that was before PS4, like automatically saved where you were. And I was used to playing on Xbox One where it would just like, I would turn the console off, turn it on, and it would be exactly where I was. And I was like, oh, I've lost 3 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not great. I had forgotten to save
it.
It'll
make
point.
You angry at the game. But yeah, so one game I jumped on that I completely was looking forward to and then just forgot about was Little Nightmares, which came out, I think, in the end of April. I think it came out like very tail end there.
Yeah,
and I was like trying to figure out why I didn't play it. And it was between Star Wars. I was probably during Star Wars Celebration. And then like a week after that, I was in Florida doing hovercraft crap.
And then we were preparing for E3.
Exactly. Yeah. So just kind of missed it. And that sucks because that game is really, really cool.
Reviewed really well.
I was so busy with other stuff, I didn't even catch the reviews.
I think that's the only thing I know about it.
For people who don't know what it is.
So, it's very much like Limbo or Inside. Like it is a very, heavily stylized kind of, it's a platformer puzzle game, mostly puzzles, story driven, and there's basically no HUD or UI or anything. And, the only difference is this is actually three dimensional. Like there's a kind of, you move around levels, like sometimes you walk towards the camera, whereas like in Limbo and Inside, it's 2.5D. Mm-hmm. There's like no setup, no context. You kind of wake up and you're in this situation. You're this little kid in a raincoat and you've got a cigarette lighter, and you go around and you solve various puzzles with that. And there are these horrifying monster people who are all around you. And they are like, just as the title would suggest, completely nightmarish.
Yeah.
They are really, really creepy. That's
there's very Limbo.
And it's like there's kind of different sort of the environments do that wonderful thing that Limbo and Inside do where they just shift. Like you're kind of like, I'm in a tunnel, and then you keep going and you're like, oh, I'm in a kitchen. And it never feels like
it didn't feel like you didn't go from like, level two to level
exactly,
three.
Exactly. Yeah. Chloe Rad, who I don't think she review it, you know, or I think
she did. Yeah.
Okay. But she posted on Twitter a bunch of screenshots comparing Little Nightmares with Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
And it lines up incredibly.
Yeah. I mean, from things like it wasn't these look similar. It was very clearly they were inspired by these camera angles or whatever you can call them in an animated movie.
Yeah.
But the camera angles, framing, like what the creature design looks like. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of weird creatures in Spirited Away.
I've always loved Spirited Away. It kind of hit me years back that is a movie that is entirely about everything in there is exaggerated things that scare kids, like overflowing the bathtub,
lodge
or
pigs.
Yeah, like just, I mean, there's some stuff that's obviously just scary.
Losing your parents.
And that feeling of being lost and just like things that are like the going down the giant
being
basement
forced
steps.
Into walk.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah. Spiders. Everything is like kind of scary in a different way. Dirty stuff, slime. Like this is, it's interesting. And this game, I would say, does a lot of the similar things, but like, Oh God, it's really, really unsettling. It is really creepy in like a just
in
a beautiful
inside kind of way.
I would say,
which is like disgusting, unsettling.
I would say even worse. I would say it's like, I mean, inside is it. That's one thing I really appreciate is there's gruesome stuff going on in the background, but it all feels very like very fairy tale-ish. It reminds me of like Roald Dahl books, like and actually. Maurice Sendak too, okay. Like Where the Wild Things Are and In the Night Kitchen, which is a book about a little naked boy who flies out the window and discovers that there are giant bakers who build like – who make like cookies and cakes in the night. And it's very strange. Mm-hmm. Just really also weird that that boy is nude in the entire book. Just not a lot of nudity in picture books these days. But
it's got like a –
there's just this kind of just vaguely unsettling kind of like the monsters in this game are just like they're monsters. Like they're scary monsters.
They look like the sort of like the adults when they become pig people in Spirited Away. Or No Face when he just becomes engorged and it's this like bulbous, horrifying mask.
They kind of look like if you try to like carve a McDonald's mascot out of like clay and you were bad at it. Like there's something that's at a glance not scary, but the more you look, the more you're like,
this is unsettling.
Oh, that's very bad. Yeah. Sound design is incredible. Like it's just gorgeous. I really love it. It's probably going to want to be one of my favorite games of the year. Mm-hmm. I haven't finished it yet, but like it's got a bunch of just spooky puzzles and like I'm kicking myself for not jumping on it sooner. Mm-hmm. So everyone.
Speaking of like, yeah. Sorry. Speaking of like carving McDonald's mascots out of clay. Those are like the reference that you used. That is what I expect when/if Dreams comes out. The stuff that people will make will be horrific in Dreams because that is what that game is carving something out of, and it's just they all look kind of creepy, even if like no matter how nice you make it look.
I mean, that
like,
was all terrifying. Did you guys ever take like a ceramics class or like anything pottery-ish in school? Like there'd be one or two people who it was like, oh, that looks really good because you're talented, and the rest of us it would be like, that's an abomination. Put it back in the kiln and let it burn.
Yeah.
Like, don't
I don't
bring
think
this
you can
out.
Like even really make like faces that look pretty in Dreams. Like I don't even know if it's possible. So I like
that.
Assuming it works the way that it's supposed to, I imagine a lot of what I would want to consume in Dreams, because it is, you know, you get to choose, will be a lot of really creepy short stories from people.
Yeah. Like I don't know if that, I don't know what that game is. I don't know if it's ever coming out. I feel like maybe they didn't really do the right thing by leaning into the darker side of it. Cause if you looked at it and you're like, this looks like a fun, colorful Play-Doh silly putty world, you'd be cool. But instead it's like, this is what cotton candy looks like in a basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, again, it's that like.
I liked that about it.
I mean, I'm curious. I feel like they're probably going to let you screw with the settings if there are settings. We don't know what this game is.
We have no idea what it is.
No, there's the color wheels. Like you can make things as bright as you want to, but it's. I really want that.
This is, so we don't have this on the sheet. This is sort of a segue-ish. Did you guys, right before we went in here, press release went out for a thing called the UFO 50.
Oh yeah, this looks awesome.
Yeah. And so it's coming to PC next year, and then they've said they're thinking about bringing it to console, which I think if it does, it'll eventually come to PS4. But it's Mossmouth's next game, so it's the Spelunky dev, their first game since Spelunky. But what they've done is, create a fictional game studio that would have existed throughout the late 80s and early 90s called UFO. And they're like, hey, we've unearthed 50 games that UFO made throughout these years, but it's being developed by, like, a game is by Mossmouth, one's by the Towerfall devs, one by the Downfall devs.
That's cool.
And like, or Downwell. Downfall is the Hitler film.
Yes.
He's in the bunker.
It's very different. Downwell is the one where you're a little guy who jumps down a well and shoots the frogs that are down there.
But I just love the idea of it almost feels like a bit like WarioWare in terms of like, here are 50 different things, go at them. Some of them are going to be longer, some of them are shorter.
They've also stressed the fact these are not mini games or micro games. These are all full games.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably going to, when they say full games, it's like to the same standard as like, you know, NES and Atari games.
Sure.
Where they're like,
this, you could beat this in half an hour.
Maybe they're kind of busted. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're saying it's going to take over 100 hours to complete.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is fantastic. I love the idea that they just have had recurring game jams and been like, let's see what works. And, I feel like maybe this will come to Switch too.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Somebody was tweeting it, at Derek Yu, who's Mossmouth, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he's the Spelunky guy. And they were like, when's Spelunky coming to Switch? I want it. And he's like, well, I might make a new game too.
You want
who
that?
Knows?
Yeah. I think it's such a cool, like, we do the same thing, like, I mean, obviously the NES Classic and the SNES Classic, but also, like, there was that crappy Sega Flashback thing that came out, and we just, like, hook it up to one of the TVs here, and then people will go through and be like, here's Altered Beast, and here's a game no one ever heard of.
We're playing it on this gorgeous, enormous 4K TV.
Yeah, it's like, we're playing, like, old Mega Man games and stuff, so I love the idea of taking that, but then being like, here's 100 games or 50 games you've literally never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're not
That's real. Really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things is always like I have the super ultra wonderfully remastered Akira 20th anniversary that has the horrible first American dub.
Yeah.
Where it's just like the voices of Ninja Turtles being like, Kaneda, you're in trouble, dude. I'm like putting it on like my TV and I'm like, I can read the labels and the bottles in the background and it still sounds like utter garbage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got a release date for Horizon the Frozen Wilds. Yep. I don't know why I said it like that. It's November.
Horizon.
And
the Frozen the Wild.
November 7th. Fans of that woman with her hair and her fur coats will be very excited to know that for $20 they can fight new robots in the snow.
New area.
Discuss.
There's no details. You said it all. Right. I thought you were going to at least just
give me like two details. This. I think it looks awesome. I like that it's not just slightly extra content. It's actually like a different area entirely. It's a little snowy. It looks really pretty.
Snowy, but then like
with photo mode.
Yeah, there's the art that was released today. It's snowy, but then she's looking down in the snowy valley, and there's not snowy valley, snowy valley. Like there's snow, not the neighborhood.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Snowy Valley is a neighborhood in San Francisco where Beyond is filmed every week in front of
cameras. Is Snowy Vale?
There's no Snowy
Valley. Is that
probably
Australia?
A place called
place in Australia?
Oh, really? Okay, well there you go. Snowy Valley is also a place in Australia.
But no, like the lake was this surreal blue that almost had a glow from underneath. So I'm like, all right, something's going on up here. Like,
yeah.
What's going on with this lake?
Yeah,
I think those are, I was looking at those. I think those are,
like glacial?
I think volcanic.
Yeah. Volcanic. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah. No, I was looking at that. I was like, that looks really cool. That's a good game. I'm not going to play this.
I think, I don't know. There's some, they hinted at some flying, spooky new flying robos. They've also, if you play through the first Horizon, this isn't a spoiler, but they allude to sort of like, I can't remember what his name was, but this isn't a spoiler.
Whenever
they allude to like something called the Devil Machine. True. And you never actually see the Devil Machine. Mm. And so I don't know if like this will tell us who the Devil Machine is.
Okay.
Every time I do say this isn't a spoiler, but this isn't a spoiler, but Snape kills Dumbledore.
What?
Snake?
Dumbledore! yeah, November 7th.
10 points for Diamond Dog.
This is not standalone. So unlike Lost Legacy, which you could play by itself,
yes.
You still need Horizon.
When does that come out? I want to play that.
Lost Legacy
August
very 22nd? Soon.
Yeah. I would like to play that
2 weeks
game.
From today.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow.
They really wouldn't give us an answer on how long it was, which they were like, well, you know, it depends on your pace. You're like, what does that mean? But I suspect it's going to be 6 to 8 hours. And I love what I play.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, remember that when it was like back in the day when that was how long a game was?
Yeah.
It wasn't like it's going to be either 80 hours or
100.
Three.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that will take you lots and lots of hours, we are having a fun contest. We have a Final Fantasy XII Collector's Edition,
which retails for 200 American shekels.
200?
Yeah, it comes with several statues.
Who needs several statues?
But it's of the different judges. The judges
Judges?
What's, are you all
I'm
right?
I'm being like a hype man.
Oh, thanks. You're doing very well.
Really, it's like if you had a mouse, it was a hype man.
No, our friends at Square Enix provided us with a collector's edition that comes with Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, several statues that you can legally call your friends.
Yeah, you can put them all over your house. Like, if you could put them on the floor. Yep. Be careful if you do that.
Hide them in your younger brother's bedroom.
You can put cheese on its butt and get Peppa's
put them
to look
at. It's only like busts. It's like neck busts.
You can put cheese on its neck and get Peppa's.
Did you say neck busts?
Neck busts.
So they're not even statues. They're just busts?
Yeah, but it's like neck busts.
That's what a bust is.
Are they actually statues or are they busts?
They're busts.
Oh, they're busts. Okay.
Sorry, we'd like to post a retraction. We don't actually have any statues to give away. We have busts.
The busts are really nice.
You can't legally call a bust your friend, Monty. It's like having a beheaded friend. It's just dead.
That's pretty screwed up.
What are you talking about?
And you probably should have put them on the floor.
The severed head in Planescape Torment follows you around. That's one of the best characters ever in games.
All right, anyway.
So you get – so the collector's edition comes with the game. It comes with the busts.
They're not even full-size. They're mini busts.
The busts are really nice.
Just read the content.
But it comes with Judge's Bergen.
The busts are really nice.
And then the soundtrack art book. various cards and everything. So the way to enter is to go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond, subscribe, and then comment on this episode.
This episode.
505, and comment, which classic Square RPG. Doesn't have to be a Final Fantasy game. It could be Brave Fencer Musashi if you want.
And the correct answer is Secret of Evermore.
Which, it could be Secret of Evermore. Which classic Square RPG you want to get the Zodiac Age treatment on PS4. And we'll choose one of you, and you will win the busts.
To be clear, Marty was talking to you, listeners at home, not to us who he was looking at, which was confusing.
They are not allowed to win the bust.
We cannot win the bust.
This is a bust-free table.
Anyway, this conversation has been terrible, and I'm sorry. Now it's time for Rapid Fire, the part of the show where we answer questions from you guys, from our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. Head over there and make some friends if you have not already. Joe Dredd, who's got a really kick-ass name, sounds like a futuristic Judged David him. Spade movie. Do you think we'll hear about any delays this holiday? Will that lead into another early year surge for gaming in 2018? What do you guys think?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, part of me thought Horizon didn't have a date. And so like a week ago, I would have been like, Horizon's getting delayed till early next year. But then it got a date. So no, it's not. I think something will slip from October 27th. We keep talking about that. It's Mario, Wolfenstein, and Assassin's Creed.
I don't know which of those would slip, though.
I think Wolfenstein. I feel like that's the less...
Yeah.
I don't know.
That it's seems like the one...
The less grounded in.
Yeah.
Like I feel like Mario and Assassin's Creed have like sort of dug their heels in.
Do you think they'd push it to Stata next year? It'd be great in January, but yeah, I don't know.
Assassin's Creed is the most sort of like, it's both tied to being a fall release because that's Ubisoft's big, huge thing aside from
I don't think that they'll push Assassin's Creed.
No, I don't think so either. If I had to pick one though, also Ubisoft, they frequently do that. They'll have like an earlier fall thing and they'll be like, whoops, sorry, it's actually December. And like, I don't think they're going to
South Park, that happens so many times.
Yeah. And we know the big one that came out. Or the one that already slipped this year was Ni No Kuni. It went from November to January, I believe.
Yeah. That sucked.
Yeah.
But yeah, still so plenty there's of more to stuff to play in January. I think I can't even remember what's coming out this fall. I was like, well, at least I'm going to get Far Cry this fall. And someone was like, no, you're not. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
All right, then.
God of War? No.
Yeah. Mike Anare says, what are the chances PUBG comes to PS4 in 2018? PlayerUnknown Battleground is a game that I really, really want to play. It sounds like a game I've wanted my entire life.
Yep.
It is breaking records left and right. This is the most played Steam game that isn't Valve developed or something.
Which is
like
insane.
Most concurrent players.
Wow. Yeah, like just, it's the most played.
Is it because it's not even out yet?
Yeah, exactly. And we saw at E3, Microsoft said that it will come to Xbox.
They said this year, I believe. So I wouldn't be surprised if it comes to PUBG next year, but I would think maybe.
Or comes to PS4.
Oh, sorry, yes.
They actually changed the PS4's name to the PUBG S4.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, when the PS4 was first launched, the thing that I was really excited about playing was DayZ, which PUBG kind of has some similarities to, with the whole like just screwing with people in a weird field. Just strange Eastern European griefing.
Yeah, all those Russian signs. Don't know where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that never came. They had this weird thing where they revealed, when they first revealed the HUD for the PS4, somebody's username was like DayZ100, and I was like, nah, that's a hint. It never happened. And I think people forgot about that game too. So.
They did. Like people, it was around the time H1Z1 came out, right? It's like people move on from these games really quickly, but PUBG has actually had really long legs. And I think it's because it is a little more contained than something like DayZ, where sometimes you accidentally spawn as a bird and you can't find your friends on a map and you have to translate from Russian from the street signs.
That sounds like the coolest game.
It's ridiculous.
Ever.
Wait,
you
I love
as a bird.
Yeah, I accidentally spawned as a bird one time. Not
that
by choice.
So
it just
cool.
happened. I spawned as a bird.
I mean, that sounds like
why
this,
is that
that's
even,
just reincarnation.
Why is that even possible?
You don't have a choice.
Yeah, I don't think it's intentional. I don't know.
That's
well, I guess
so
it has
cool.
to be. Yeah.
Literally, I only like games where you arbitrarily play as a bird momentarily. So the only games I enjoy are Heretic, where there's a cheat code where you
can
get
chicken. The original Prey.
Yeah. And then, yeah. And then, and Assassin's Creed 3, where you have that funny dream where you're a hawk.
Yeah.
Now that's, yeah.
Daisy's great.
I hope we get,
I think PUBG will come to
I hope we get PUBG. Like, that game sounds like so
Xbox
much fun.
Doesn't really do exclusives in terms of third-party games that much anymore, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just a time exclusive. I think we'll get this next year.
Justin Aldwin says, this is such a tricky question. Should I watch Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball Z Kai, which I believe is formerly known as Dragon Ball Kai? I have no previous Dragon Ball experience. Stop right there, please. Don't start with Dragon Ball Z. Start with Dragon Ball. It is terrible and weird that was ever localized and released on its own. It makes no sense when it starts out. Like, why do Piccolo and Goku hate each other? Who the hell is everybody? So start with Dragon Ball. That's the beginning. Second, don't watch it. Read the comic because there's no filler in there. There's no, like, there's
same applies to Kai, though.
Yeah.
If you were going to watch one, you wanted to watch Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball Z Kai. I would say Kai. Up until it ends, and then you have to watch Dragon Ball anyway because Kai doesn't last the whole way. But Kai is basically like a director's cut in that it's a shorter version that cuts out the filler. Some of the animations are redone. Some of the music is redone. So it's like basically what it was intended to be without being stretched
out. So is Super a sequel?
Super is a brand new series.
It's a new series.
At the end of Z.
What about GT?
GT apparently never happened.
GT's not
or
canon.
Or it happened later on.
It's not it's canon.
Basically, Toriyama pretty much
GT's
got the...
like a dream that is off to the side.
Sure.
Toriyama got the crap beat out of them while they're making it. I highly recommend, they make collected volumes of the manga, which is like, three in ones or whatever, and they're like 10 bucks or something. I think it's cheaper digitally.
Oh, they're totally cheaper than that now, yeah.
Yeah, they're fantastic, and they have his letters section, and it starts out, and people are like, I like Krillin. He's like, oh, thanks, he's a character I invented, anyway. And then you keep going, and he's like, anyway, the cool thing about drawing comics for a living that are successful is that your days off are your choice. You can go to the theme parks in the middle of the week, and your family can come with you. Anyway, and then it keeps going, and he's like, my back hurts a whole lot. I have health problems because they keep making me have these boys fighting and charging up a whole bunch. But yeah, they had him like chained to his desk, and he was like forced to keep stretching stuff out. Yeah, read Dragon Ball first. Dragon Ball's so funny too.
Dragon Ball is really funny. Also, yeah. Super is great, and I think you could probably pick up Super without having seen Dragon Ball Z. Maybe watch some of the movies.
It's all stupid. It's all dumb.
It's all very stupid.
Yeah.
Like, but yes, between these, I would say Kai, but purists will be very angry at me for saying that, but
yeah, I mean they basically trim it down to what it is in the manga anyway.
Yeah,
and it's, I mean, there's no filler episodes, which means you don't get the one where Goku and Piccolo have to go to the DMV and take driver's
test. That doesn't make sense. They fly so fast. Fly so quickly.
There's an episode that is entirely a character named Mr. Satan, who's called Hercule in the American one, and he's just running around destroyed Earth trying to find beer.
Yeah.
Everyone is dead. His entire family is dead, or they've been absorbed by like a genie. But, you know, he's trying to get this beer, and like all the bars are destroyed. He's just like drinking out of taps, and there's air coming out. He's got this dog with him.
Super has like the most powerful god in the entire universe, and he's just really distracted by foods.
Yeah, he likes desserts.
You know what? What if I ate this nice ice cream? And everyone's like, please don't kill us and everyone else that we love. Like, yeah. Here you go. And he's like, all right, this is great.
Yeah.
And then they just hang out for the rest of the show.
That sounds nice.
Dragon Ball's incredible.
Dragon Ball's good stuff. I love Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Anthony Chechi says, which sequel are you most looking forward to between Middle Earth, Shadow of War, The Evil Within 2, and Wolfenstein 2?
I think Wolfers. Yeah. I think I'm really, from what we've seen of Wolfenstein, I think that's the, like, I really like short, tight, awesome, single player shooter campaigns, and I feel like this is gonna be that.
I think Shadow of War is really impressive in terms of tech, just as, the original was, but the thing is, it feels more like, feels less like a completely different narrative and more like an extension on the first one. But whereas, I don't know, it's like a hard for me to even figure out how to phrase what I'm trying to say, but the new Colossus feels like a very fresh thing where I don't know what I don't know what to expect all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it feels less familiar, even though it's the same character and technically the same. You know.
Yeah.
I didn't like The Evil Within. So.
Yeah. I think, this is tough. Wolfenstein, I actually, the new Colossus looked so interesting and so kind of just manic and like unsettling in a lot of, I mean, they got like Klansmen and like German rock and roll and diners.
Strawberry milkshakes.
Yeah. A lot of strange, like kind of like, I feel like they've taken the parts of the first one and just really kind of like blown them out of proportion.
Yeah.
I went back and played the first one just because I was so curious about it. So I'm looking forward to that a lot. I loved Shadow of Mordor. I'm very, Shadow of War, the word you're looking for is samey.
Yeah,
it looks very samey.
Yeah. You can double jump now.
You can double jump? That's nonsense. Yeah. J.R.R. Tolkien never said you could double jump.
There's no double jumping.
And
I mean,
books.
I don't know what they call them. Sieges, maybe? Wait, you're trying to like overtake a fort. They are pretty cool, but it's not enough for me to get really hooked into. It's just like, pick who you want to go into this battle with. Pick their buffs, like see the enemy's buffs and try and counter them and then capture points and have a boss fight. And I feel like it's not quite enough.
I always loved the sort of the Far Cry-ish mechanics.
I want to say I'm very excited about
Shadow,
this game anyway.
Yeah. In Shadow of Mordor, like the Far Cry stuff where you're like, oh, I'm gonna hypnotize a pig and like ride it into this wall and go up here, poison the bees or whatever that you did in that game. But like this one, and obviously the Nemesis system was incredible and awesome and like a huge part of it, but I feel like they really, just really focused on the Nemesis system and like.
Yeah, it works in a positive way now. So it's like there's a positive Nemesis system where people that you recruit sort of have their own system, which I.
Nemesis system.
Basically, which I really like that as well. I also think there's more depth to the characters in terms of like NPCs, like from the orcs to enemies that you fight. I think there's more depth in it, and it's like feels more like it's based in Tolkien lore, but at the same time, like I'm super excited about it, but it doesn't like stand out to me in the same way that Wolfenstein does, which is mostly from the trailer.
It's interesting. Usually by this time of the year, I'm like, all right, I want a big, meaty, open world game, whether it's something like Far Cry or AC or like this. Whereas like we started the year off with Horizon and Zelda.
I'm exhausted.
And I'm like, exhausted.
That's
like,
probably a good point.
Fatigue.
If it were coming out next year, it'd probably be something different.
Or if one of those games didn't exist. And so that's to no fault of obviously, Shadow of War.
Yeah, I still think it looks awesome, and I played like in total an hour and a half of it, I think, and I really liked it. Mm-hmm. So. Double jumps.
I think that the big spider and the tree people are in the new Shadow of War, though, so I'm excited about that.
There are tree people.
Yeah, the shalabs and the aunts.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. So Chris Langan says, what is the most frustrating game you have ever played? Ooh, that's a good one.
I think the most frustrating one I ever had to review was I feel like now I'm like leaning into worst ones. There was a game called Never Dead. Do you remember Never Dead?
Oh, where your body would explode.
Yeah, your body would explode, but you wouldn't die. And so like eventually all of your body would explode and you'd just be this rolling head.
Yeah.
You'd have to like find your limbs.
Which, by the way, that mechanic would have been so cool in a Deadpool game, but we're probably never.
Oh my God. That would have been amazing in a Deadpool game.
You're just like a head hopping around.
Yeah. But the game was, very bad.
It was busted.
It was a very, very busted game and I had to review it and it was just very broken and hard to get through. So I feel like that was ultimately probably the most frustrating thing.
Ninja Gaiden, Razor's Edge. Yeah, I think it's three. It was
the
it was the re-release in Australia.
Okay.
Because it was R18. I might be thinking of the wrong name, but it was definitely one of the Ninja Gaidens you fight.
It was a Ninja Gaiden 3.
A big old T-Rex inside of a museum at one point.
I think that's three.
It's three.
Yeah,
that was frustrating because it's Ninja Gaiden. I didn't hate it. I think that's the one. Very frustrating.
I think that's the one Mitch notoriously hated. I think you gave it like a three.
Yeah,
oh, really?
It wasn't great. No. That was the one that was what's his face with the sunglasses on indoors. He didn't work on that or something.
Itagaki.
Yeah, Itagaki. Like he everyone was basically loved Ninja Gaiden 1 and 2. And this was kind of supposed to be like the continuation of that, but it just didn't quite.
Might have been in the midst of his lawsuit.
Yeah. Anyway, it's funny now. Like my fiance Jen will like somebody will bring up Ninja Gaiden and she'll be like.
Oh, because she's only seen that one?
She's only seen that? Yeah.
Oh, that's
and it was just like, she's like, you were yelling so much when you were playing that game.
But Ninja Gaiden 1 is frustrating, but in a more satisfying
way. In like
an
incredibly designed
this one specifically was just like, you would die in a way that was just like, that was
also,
I wasn't even near him.
Loaded with quick time events and stuff. Like,
yeah.
It was a lot of just sort of just kind of, that wasn't a great game.
Yeah.
Frustrating. Oh, man.
I had a lot of trouble with the first Darksiders. I played that on the hardest difficulty my first time, and I got frustrated a ton with that.
I've been getting really frustrated with Just
End
Cause.
Deadly Premonition.
Really? Oh, yeah, it's free this month.
It's free this month. Yeah. It's a really good game. I try to jump back into it.
First
and
one?
I, no, three.
Three.
And the load times are still like just long enough that it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, the selling point of Just Cause is if you die, it's supposed to be funny and entertaining, and then it punishes you with a loading screen, so you don't want to die. And it's like, then what am I?
Yeah.
These explosions aren't fun anymore.
Yeah, when we had to play Bloodborne before it was patched, like each death was legitimately 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's terrible.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
Yeah. Here's a big one. This has been a big hot topic this week. Hosiah Byler says, ketchup versus mayo. This is, of course, the big hot discussion from the Splatfest over on the Nintendo Game Boy system of the Splat.
It looked like, just watching what a map looked like at the end of that, just looked like bodily fluids everywhere.
So, it makes me so
just
happy.
Looked
pretty
like
gross.
A crime scene.
It would have smelled bad.
Yeah.
These people swimming around in ketchup and mayo, and they're also their squids.
Yeah.
But they're like,
let's be realistic. That whole game would smell like a disgusting aquarium without any condiments. But the fact that they're just spraying them left and right.
Oh,
it's hot and sunny out, just mayonnaise all over the place.
Yep.
Also, I remember when that started out, I was like,
and marine life. It's not good.
I think they should do chocolate milk and lemonade and see which is better there. It's a big old pee pee poo poo for me. But no, I was like, I remember when that first started, I was like, is there red ink? And they were like, no, this is rated E for everyone. I was like, that's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
They were like, let's have a big, dirty, disgusting fight.
Also, the correct answer is mayo.
Thank you. Yeah.
I agree with mayo.
I know that it's probably an unfair sort of setup. I think that mayonnaise and ketchup are kind of on different levels because a lot of like some people are like mayonnaise is gross and some people are like, I love mayonnaise. You love mayonnaise. Yeah. You know, you customize it more. You can't mix something into ketchup and make it different.
No.
Like maybe spicy.
Yeah. And I think that mayonnaise is like better on burgers than ketchup is ketchup and fries it's a solid combo.
Ketchup is great.
Mayo.
Yeah.
But you could turn it into an aioli.
Exactly.
I mean, here's the thing. There's also ketchup and mustard and there's some people out there who are like terrible mustard babies. So that would just wouldn't be a fair fight.
Like
it's funny because in Splatfest, they were more people on Team Ketchup, but Team Mayo won anyway.
That's because they're better people.
So it's like more people voted for Ketchup, but Mayo was better.
Maybe there was the adults playing.
Well, I think it's a good parallel of like,
of America?
But people probably consume, like in the US, more ketchup, but Mayo can be used on more things.
Right, right.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the cultured so condiments.
Here's an interesting conversation that came up recently.
It's just a white people condiment, let's be real. It's just
it really is. Yeah, it's definitely like white people sandwich.
Yeah. That's
my sandwich is too spicy.
Oh, my white person's getting all dry.
These crusts are hurting my lips. I'm affluent. Is there some sort of oils I could rub on this? No, somebody was telling me like, there's that old discussion of like, is a hamburger a sandwich? Mm-hmm. And I think I may have stumbled across some evidence that helps settle that. When you cut a sandwich in half and you share it, that's not weird, right? Half a sandwich. If you do that with a hamburger.
That's pretty weird.
Right?
Yeah.
That's weird. It's, you can still sometimes do it, but if you see, you're always kind of like, someone's kind of being cheap here.
Well, but at what point does something stop being a sandwich and stop being a hamburger? What's the key difference?
It's made out of hamburger.
It's made out of beef.
It's the meat?
Yeah, it's beef.
Or turkey or, I mean, if it's.
Yeah, I guess like a turkey burger.
I think it has to be ground up and reformed in a patty.
Yeah, I think you're right. Patty. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But I mean, yeah, you can, I mean, if you put like a CD player between two pieces of bread, that's not a hamburger. That is a sandwich.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure where I was going with that.
One of my favorite things that I think of when I'm drunk.
So
if
breakfast
it's not a patty,
Hagen's asking about breakfast sandwich.
Yeah. No, a breakfast sandwich is not a burger.
No.
There's no, like, a sausage, egg, and cheese is not a burger.
No, if you put that's actually a really, that's a good question. But no, if it's English muffins and stuff.
Were we arguing about that at E3? You're like, this is a breakfast burger. And I was like, no, this is just a breakfast sandwich.
Right.
That's Ubisoft.
Was it on like a brioche bun? Was it
clearly
a hamburger?
Yeah.
Okay, that's confusing. I don't know why they would do it. It's okay to put an egg on a hamburger. That's just a breakfast.
It's just insulting. But really, fun fact, if two people on opposite sides of the earth drop a piece of bread at the same time, for a brief moment, the earth becomes a sandwich.
That's so dumb.
You know, I want to try that.
What do you mean? It's not for a brief moment. It's until one or the other picks it up.
Until the sandwich moves.
So if I just drop one piece of bread, does that mean the earth is an open-faced sandwich?
Well, we have to figure out what is literally on the opposite side of here and then like find someone there and call them and be like,
Looney Tunes, hey, if you dig, you hit China.
Is it always China?
Guys, we got to wrap things up and head over to Google Earth to solve this big brain buster.
Very
but
excited.
One last question from Chris Woodside, which is, which new Disney property, world, Marvel, Star Wars, etc., would you most like to see in Kingdom Hearts 3 in 2035 when it finally releases?
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, sorry. I don't make Kingdom Hearts fans, I wasn't trying to goad you or insult you or anything. Please don't dox me.
I think Toy Story is an excellent get. I think that is going to be awesome. I don't really think that I want Star Wars in Kingdom Hearts. I don't know why. I don't think that.
Yeah.
You don't want
something
the.
That's weird.
You don't want the Gungans.
I don't think I do.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I think. Well, we already have a little bit of Marvel with Big Hero 6. I don't know. I hope that I want them to go back to some classic Disney stuff they never did. Like I really love the Robin Hood adaptation with the fox and the fat little bear as Friar.
But that's not a new Disney property.
Mm.
What new Disney property?
I mean, Frozen seems like a given.
Frozen
I
does seem like a given,
either, but
yeah.
ESPN.
It's so successful.
ESPN? Yeah. That's a new Disney property. Yeah.
How about the
technically, doesn't
the
Disney,
IGN show?
Doesn't Disney own you for
Weeknight,
a little bit?
Yeah. Disney XD.
Yeah, there you go.
Can I be the property?
Can the level take place in the IGN office? You can like go on Max and Brian's desk and fight all their toys.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's sort of like Toy Story.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, more drinking.
Or a Disney property.
Yeah. Would you like to hang out with that boy with the large snowboarding shorts
big
and the
big
key?
Shoes?
Haley Joel Osment?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Him too. He's also a nice guy.
I mean, he's voiced by him. They're all the same.
But the same man.
Also
they're separately, nice guy.
Yeah. Did you know that Sephiroth is voiced by Lance Bass in the original Kingdom Hearts?
I don't know if you're lying to me.
No, I'm not. We were talking about it on the weekend.
Really?
Sephiroth, the one-winged angel, everyone's favorite RPG antagonist, the greatest villain of all time, voiced by NSYNC's Lance Bass.
It's true.
Again, you're not lying to me.
No,
not
it's absolutely true.
Man, that's a.
It's great.
That kind of hurts to think about it.
No, I like it.
All right. Well, anyway.
Bye.
This is Beyond. We do this every week, so tune in. And remember, if you want to win that funny collection of busts from Final Fantasy XII, which also comes with the soundtracks and whatnot, head over to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond. Subscribe and comment on this very video that I'm saying this in. If you're watching this on IGN.com, go to YouTube and watch the same video again and then leave a comment saying which Square RPG or Square game or whatever you want to see remade in the same way, the Collector's Edition, whatever. Just, you know, whatever we said earlier.
We just want to give you the free thing.
And be sure to check out Alana on the Disney XD show. How do people watch that?
We don't really – check your local listings.
Check your local listings.
But it is starting to air again. We took a two-week hiatus next week, so it'll start on Monday again. And then, like, we're going through Gamescom and PAX West. So there's tons of coverage out of the events there. Super excited to go to
You guys left on a cliffhanger where Miranda – almost got shot. there was a gunshot, and you were like, "What is Miranda all right?" And then it's going
to
come back.
Head over to the last episode of the Disney XD show and leave a comment saying, "Who do you think shot Miranda?" and win a guest role on the next season.
It airs on IGN.com and on YouTube on IGN the morning after it airs on TV, so you guys can watch it.
Cool. And then, yeah, Marty, you guys are doing, you guys do Unlocked and whatnot.
Yeah.
People know where to find you.
Yeah.
It's Monday, man. What do you want?
I have a YouTube video going up this week that was very highly requested where I react to, Outback Steakhouse commercials.
Bloomin' Onions?
Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, a lot of them are pretty bad. There's some bad stuff in there. Just a lot of really dumb stereotypes. Yeah.
You went to an Outback Steakhouse.
I did.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
So good. Like
we have this weird thing just among our friends.
Yeah, you guys kind of take me to trash places.
No, we do this to each other.
You're right.
We bully each other by going to bad chain restaurants. No. Marty, for your birthday, we took you to the Rainforest Cafe.
Yeah. Spent so much money.
Wow, that place
is so stupid. It's really expensive, but we're like, let's get glow in the dark cups and.
We took Brian to Buca di Beppo.
Yeah,
we've been to Buca di Beppo. It started ironically, but we've been there so many times now that it's just like we're just trash people.
We still haven't sat at the Pope Head table.
San Francisco is one of those like it's a culinary capital of the world. There's amazing restaurants, and we're like, let's go to the one that has T-shirts in the front.
Well, we've tried to go to this pizza place called 00 a bunch of times that everyone tells me is the best. I have never been there because every time instead we go to Buca di Beppo.
It's across the street, and there's much more seating. It's easier to get a table. Also, it's funny because we're pranking people. I feel like spending an amount of money to like prank your friend as like a goof birthday dinner is the equivalent of like vandalizing your own home. You're like, this will show them. It's like, you live here.
You have to go to
your own house.
Yeah.
I peed on my own floor.
We may have bad judgment.
Anyway, thank you guys for watching so much. And, we're all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. She's Charlanazard. And you're McBiggity with 2 G's and 2 T's.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. That's the end of the show. It's over. Go play some games. Any of them.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.